Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the gyps in the PC. It is Saturday, the 17th day of December, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to the last soundbites of 2022. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Whenever something goes wrong with an app or a service that can potentially affect users, whether that's a security breach or some other kind of service interruption, we always appreciate when the company involved clearly discloses what's going on to its users. After all, depending on the severity of the issue, they may want to take some steps to keep their data safe. But for as much as we appreciate such heads-up warnings, it can be a little frustrating when they're exceptionally light on details. And that's just the kind of situation we're looking at now as Google raises an alarm about a bug affecting Assistant. An email coming from the Google Assistant team started landing in the inboxes of some users earlier this week, acknowledging the discovery of a bug affecting the Google Assistant and enrolled devices. Google is no stranger to bugs, but aside from saying that this bug apparently disabled personal routines and the hey followed by the word Google, hot word, there's not much, you're welcome, there's not much to go on about just what's happening here, what it's caused by, and what devices are affected. The message instructs recipients to check their assistant settings and make sure everything is okay. When they use it, we suppose that if something looks out of place, then that means you're affected. We don't know yet. The email does mention that the company will be in touch with more information, but it doesn't say when. While we appreciate a warning when something's gone wrong, this one definitely raises more questions than it answers. Don't get us wrong. As we said before, disclosing issues is excellent practice, even if they're minor. But Google is not normally one to send out this kind of email notice, and even then we'd hope for some deeper insight into what's gone wrong or at least how it's being fixed. If you've noticed Google Assistant acting all wonky, this is your sign to go check on your settings and make sure your routines all look good. Good luck with that. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what's your favorite digital assistant? And your choices, in alphabetical order, are... oh, I can't say this one either. Alaska, Bixby, remember Bixby? Cortana, remember Cortana? Google Assistant and Siri. So far, we've got 18 votes, and Google Assistant is well ahead of the pack. But you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like just to remind you. And, of course, if you have more to say on this or dang near any other subject, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I will say this. We have found, in talking to people over time, we found that people are seriously into their assistants these days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people use them for everything. You're talking to somebody and you'll say, you know, oh, what was the name of that movie? Oh, hey.
Go ahead and say it. Just to set it all up. Okay, Google.
Yeah, right. Just to set it all up.
Yeah.
I
see
you,
all these apps going off now.
Right.
It seems to be like an all or nothing. People use it all the time or they never use it at all.
Right, right. But when people use it, they truly do use it all the time.
Well, I had one friend that didn't realize that you can sit there and... tell it to listen to a tune.
Yeah.
And it'll tell you the title of the song and the year it came out.
You can just say, what song is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it could do that. Yeah, it's been able to do that for quite a while.
Yeah, there's an amazing number of things you can do with these things. We have an Alaska in the kitchen, and my wife uses it all the time to time things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, set an alarm for 30 seconds, set an alarm for 15 minutes. You know, set a reminder.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reminder for?
Reminder to remind you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're really, really integrate themselves into your lives very quickly. Very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, very dependent. You know, it makes searching so much easier.
Makes everything so much easier.
Just don't have to sit there and do the typing and worrying about all that stuff. It's talking.
It is now quite regular to hear my wife say, you know, we're watching a television show or a movie, and my wife will say, how old is that actor?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That sort of thing. So,
We were watching an NCIS Hawaii the other day. Branscombe Richardson.
No kidding.
What's his name? Yeah.
Branscombe Richardson.
Yeah.
Richardson, I think.
Was on it. I haven't seen him on things in ages.
I know it. I would have honestly said he must be dead.
Well,
he looked it.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, he's the Native American action star that was huge in the 90s. But he's also part Native Hawaiian. And so he was on NCIS Hawaii. He had a long gray beard and got a little heavier like we all do. But I know that voice. I know that voice. Oh, my God, it's him. Yeah. So it's one of those things where I got to have IMDb, you know, to look up who that
constantly.
Is.
Constantly. Cheese and crackers. I can't watch anything anymore. I discovered speaking of NCIS Hawaii, I was watching that, and one of the women on it looked so familiar to me.
Yeah.
And then yesterday I was watching a Murdoch mystery. She's the coroner, the second coroner, not the one that, spoiler alert, eventually marries Murdoch. The other one, the second one, not the third one, but the second one. And I was just quite amused by that.
The tall blonde or the short brunette?
The short brunette. So,
Yasmin.
Yeah. All right. Oh, and by the way, before we get to the phones, we should probably let everybody know that it's Rumble Day.
As promised, they fermented for about a week plus a couple days.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. We should probably go to the phones
You
still can. Our first caller is Wayne from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Wayne?
Well, I have a couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
The first is, I've tried to burn a DVD. I'm using Mint, and I tried using Brasio.
Yep.
And I got a funny problem. I'm using a 4.7 gigabyte disk, and it says all I've got is 1.9 gigabytes on this thing, which I don't. It's a brand new disk. And I understand it's been over a year or so, and they apparently haven't fixed the problem.
Yeah, I stopped using Bracero for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
I use either XF Burn or that's the one I use mostly, XF Burn.
Okay, now, does any burning software come with the Mint by any chance?
I think you can install any one of them.
Okay.
From the
store?
Software store. Yeah.
Well, I tried XF Burn, and it gave me an error message, and it says burn mode not currently implemented. And then it gives me a code number of 1849.
Huh. 1849?
That is correct.
I don't know. Here's the thing, though. There are not. It depends on your burner itself, the hardware burner.
Mm-hmm.
First, is it a DVD burner?
Yes.
Secondly, is it a compatible DVD format? So there's
plus and minus.
Plus and minus.
R and RW.
R and RW. So the question is, which does your burner handle, and do you have the right DVDs for that burner?
I have burned with this before, but I haven't used XF Burn before.
Okay, so it may be the other thing that may be, okay, a couple things to try.
Okay.
The first thing to try, you've tried Bracero and you've tried XF Burn.
Yes.
I can't think of what the other one is.
I'm trying to think of the one that I
use. K3B is one I know. I have not used that one. The other thing is, do you have the right driver? The problem may not be in the hardware or in the hardware, whether it's the burner or the disc. Okay. The problem might be the driver. And I don't, you would need to go to the manufacturer of that burner.
Okay.
And see if they have a separate driver for Mint. Often, what you find with many of these versions of Linux is you have to tell it, allow third-party applications.
Okay.
And if you said no to that during installation, or no to, sometimes they call it third-party applications, sometimes they call it non-free software.
Okay.
If you said no to that, then you may not have gotten the driver that you need to handle your DVD player.
Is it a video DVD or audio DVD or data DVD that you're trying to burn?
Basically, what I'm doing is I have an ISO file for another flavor of Linux.
So a data DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, burning an ISO as an ISO is different yet than just copying the data onto it. Rufus, I have to use on Mac and Windows to do that.
Because I know on my XF Burn, basically they've got a button you hit, and I've done it once before, and it worked very well.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, things are not working so good, and I'm really kind of confused.
Well, when you say they were working good, was it working under Mint, or was it?
No.
Okay.
That makes a difference.
Yeah, because what I had was originally Ubuntu, and I downloaded XF Burn for that, and I made the copy for Mint, and it worked well.
Here's the other one. So I found an article on one of the Linux Mint forums to use the built-in tool called USB Image Writer.
Yeah.
And that points me to Balin Etcher.
That's the name.
Yeah,
that's the one.
That's
the one I was trying to think of. Yeah, that works great.
Okay, what was that again?
Etcher, Etcher. I'll put a link on it too. From Balina, Balena, Mac, Windows, and Linux.
Okay. Well, I'll give that one a try.
That works great. I've used that myself.
Okay, that sounds like that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my second problem. When I installed Mint, I also set up a special partition for my home directory in case I wanted to change OSs. And when I went to install my archive of my home directory, what had happened was I actually wound up putting that on top of what was already there from Mint. So what I now have is home, Wayne, home, Wayne. And then I get to my files. Is there a way I can get rid of those problems, or what should I have done differently?
Is the second home, Wayne, a folder?
Yes.
Yeah. What you can do is just grab everything inside the second Wayne folder.
Yes.
And move it up a level. And then that second Wayne folder should be empty and you can delete it.
Okay. Okay. Now, what did I probably do incorrectly that made this situation happen?
Well, when you copied everything into your home Wayne,
yes,
you copied your home Wayne folder off your backup instead of the files inside your home Wayne backup.
Oh, I see. Because the command I used was tarcvjf, and I had media Wayne. And then I've got my USB number, and then I called the backup tar.bz2 space, and then there was a dot.
Right, but inside that backup tar,
yes,
you have a folder called Home Wayne, and so it did exactly what you asked it to.
Yep.
Put the Home Wayne folder in and then put everything in the Home Wayne folder.
Home Wayne went into Home Wayne because that's where you were
right.
pointed.
Right.
Instead
right.
of pointing it to the root of that hard drive.
Right.
You pointed it to the folder within that hard drive.
Right.
Ah. Okay. And if I go to change OSs, once I get this thing straightened out, all I have to do then is go to the root directory and then just plain install the new OS that I would use.
Right. And now, hold on a second. Is the your separate home directory, is that on a different hard drive or just a partition in your home directory?
Partition.
Okay. You got to be very careful when you install a different version of Linux.
Okay.
And I mean very careful.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is to, once again, make sure you've got a good backup.
Right.
And if you screw it up, then you've got that backup.
Got it.
Sounds like
okay. That makes sense.
There you go.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'm going to try out Etcher and see how well that works for me.
Yep. I think you'll like Balina Etcher better.
Great. Well, thank you very much for all your help.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
The other thing, of course, is to just buy a decent thumb drive, and you can back up onto that. I mean, they make awfully big thumb drives. And again, I don't trust thumb drives for daily rewrites.
They're so cheap that they're,
right.
yeah,
they
just.
I don't trust them for daily rewrite, but for a backup that you put away,
yeah,
they're reliable enough. So that's okay. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys, and Merry Christmas to everybody.
And to you, and Happy New Year.
Sure. Thank you. I'm trying to switch over to Safari. I'm trying to wean myself off Google. What I'd like to know is if when I'm in Safari searching, often Google will still come back up, and I find myself using the Google search engine. Will Safari kill the tracking ability of Google, or does Google still do what it does in Safari? And should I try to use, say, another search engine like Foxfire or something? I'm kind of lost here. Chrome
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, Safari does have a built-in tracking blocker. And according to my Safari report, Google Tag Manager was prevented from profiling me across 88 different websites in the last 30 days.
Right.
So looks like, yes, Safari will block Google content trackers. Also, what you may want to switch to is the DuckDuckGo search engine, which claims to be just as good as Google and has no tracking at all. And Safari, in the Safari preferences, you can change your search engine as well as to DuckDuckGo from Google.
And I know at least in Chrome, and I suspect in every browser, you can add the DuckDuckGo extension.
Yeah.
Which will, no matter what you use for your engines, will help prevent tracking across websites. You should still use DuckDuckGo for your search engine, but once you're off the search engine and onto someone else's page,
uh-huh.
DuckDuckGo cannot help you unless you've also added this extension to your browser.
I see. Okay, I'm somewhat familiar with DuckDuckGo when I turn on my Linux machine. Mm-hmm. And then I use DuckDuckGo almost exclusively there, but I still don't know a lot about it. But I just upgraded last night to Ventura. I think it's 13.1 finally.
Yeah.
And I just decided, hey, let me go ahead and see if I can begin to use Safari more, because I looked the other day and Google had pages of tracking. I was just crazy.
Sure.
You know, I'm trying to go to someplace illegal, but still, it looks like you get tracked on everything you do.
Yep.
So I was just curious about that. I won't hold you up, but I'll go in. One last thing. Now, when I go into Safari, it asks me if I want to use, go into preferences and load extensions. Should I just pick them all and put them all in there, or what?
You decide which extensions you want to use. So extensions are bits of code that extend the functionality of the browser. And so you can choose which extensions you want. Like Nick was just saying, the DuckDuckGo extension is popular. I use one called Ghostery that also helps prevent trackers. The problem is there's a lot of malicious extensions that sneak in. And so it's not a bad idea to look at your extension list and see if you really installed those or something that snuck in. It will warn you. So right now on my Ghostery, I'm getting a kind of a scary message that this extension can read and alter websites I visit.
Ooh,
yes, it does, yeah. By blocking the trackers. It's
right.
It is technically altering the website. I want it to do that, so right. I leave it turned on.
Okay. All right.
So if you didn't intentionally install any extensions, they're probably either junk or could, in fact, be malicious.
Okay. Well, I've got a free day today, and I think I'm going to spend some time delving into this and seeing what I can put on there, because I'm starting to get a little crazy with all of this stuff now that you can put on. I just looked at one site that says get started with standout Safari extensions. So I guess I'll give that a try and see what it is, and we'll have at it for a while.
Yeah, that'd be a list of extensions that people really like under Safari.
Right, right. All right, well, as usual, thank you for your help. You pointed me in the direction, because I was kind of lost as a goose here. Get lost. Actually.
Well, you don't have to be lost as a goose, because you're going to go to DuckDuckGo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Larry. Have a great holiday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Yeah, if you ever want to get nervous, go to your Google dashboard.
We don't have time.
If you go to your Google dashboard, and you can see the list of data that Google has about you, and it's pretty scary sometimes.
It's a lot. Well, that's how they make their money.
Yep.
You know, they give you free stuff and track you in return, so... I get that.
If you use Google email, which a lot of people do, it'll track all of your purchases, because you got a receipt in your email. And that's just a feature they have for you.
Yep. And when we come back, we should probably talk about duck.com as an email thing. All right. That music tells us that we're going to take a quick little break, and not a terribly long one, so don't go too far, but take a little break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And let me say once again, amazing job on the rum balls.
Thank you.
Very tasty.
Good.
Very tasty.
We'll have to up the proof, though, next year. Like I said, this year was only 105.
What? Cheese and crackers.
I know.
We need some cheese and crackers.
We need some cheese and crackers.
Yeah, those.
Nah, those are good. Good chocolate. Good taste.
Good.
All right. While I can still speak, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Doug? Doug? I've gone deaf.
Hold on a minute.
Oh.
I think we lost him.
We're checking.
We got to reboot the box again. Have you tried turning it off?
Anybody there?
What? Have you tried turning it off and back on again?
Exactly. It's a phone system. They often work. Okay, put them back up. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Oh, this is fun. I'm working with my girlfriend's 8-month-old Dell laptop, which from day one was having a problem with Zoom not being able to produce audio. But that was the app. It worked, if I recall, through their website. Next thing that's happened is no audio from anything in the computer. And, for example, from Media Player, I get a message saying, we can't find an audio playback device, blah, 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 blah. I've been all through Device Manager, and the diagnostic tool found nothing, the Microsoft diagnostic tool. Any ideas here?
Yes. The lucky thing is you're using a Dell laptop.
Uh-huh.
And Dell does have on their website a section where you can go in and put in the service number, I think it is, of the laptop and get a list of all the hardware in there and links to all the drivers for all the hardware in there.
Service tag is usually, underneath or
On the bottom of a laptop or on the back of a desktop.
Yep.
Yeah, there are known issues with some of the Dell audio drivers. In Realtek audio chipsets running Zoom.
Right.
That's exactly what it's got, Realtek.
Yep.
So one thing you should do, and this is not just for Doug, this is for every person listening. Turn your laptop over right now, go around to the back of your computer, and write down those tags. Because particularly on a laptop, since it's just on the bottom, it can get rubbed off over time. You do not want to lose that tag number. So write it down. Stick it into your password manager under, hardware or Dell or whatever it is. Do that even if you don't own a Dell. Do that. Put the serial number, and if there's a service tag number, put that in and keep hold of those. That's important. And so do it right now. Don't wait. Don't think. Just do it. But yeah, Doug, that's what you're going to have to do. Get that service number, write it in your password manager, and then go to Dell's website, put it in there, and see what they have in terms of updated drivers. And they will be, if they have an updated driver, which they probably do, download that and follow the instructions on the website in order to install it.
Quite often, Dell used to put it on their little utility that you could run. And open it up, and it would tell you all the information about your computer. You know, how much memory it had, the hard drive, the video, the whole nine yards, along with the service tag number and the model of your computer.
Right. But, get that service tag number. Go to Dell's website, this support, Dell support, and you're on your way.
You have any faith at all in the Intel version of that scans the whole machine, or I'll save that for later if necessary?
It probably isn't going to do you as much good as the direct Dell website.
Okay.
Well, Dell has their own support assistant that will look through the known Dell drivers.
Right, okay. All righty. We're going to do that right now.
There you go.
Thanks for the heads up. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, since a lot of... PCs use Intel motherboards. Intel has their own scanner for it. There's probably similar things from the Gigabyte and the MSI and all the other motherboard manufacturers.
Yep. But for those, you may need to open it up and look at what's on the motherboard as opposed to the tag. But most laptop manufacturers do have something like that. So get those pieces of information and keep them handy. You may not need them now, but you may need them in 2 years. So be aware. And again, the other thing is also please be aware that at some point, every manufacturer will stop supporting some piece of hardware. And, at that point, sorry.
It's impossible to keep up with it. Even the same type, they can do revisions as far as chipsets and everything else, doing revisions on those that, you know, might make it incompatible that was working before, but now with this new version, it's not going to.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. We have a lot of Irondequoit people today. Hi, Rich. What's up?
We all must not be busy today.
Clearly.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that good stuff, first of all.
You too.
My question is from the Mastermind Lounge there the other night, last week, and Nick, maybe you can remember this. A gentleman was talking about hooking up a hard drive to his Wi-Fi system. My question on that is whether or not is it that's secure enough for somebody not to be able to get into that hard drive?
It's as secure as your Wi-Fi password is.
Okay.
And as secure as your router firmware is.
Right.
Okay.
And that's true of every device on your home network.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering if that was more susceptible just being left there with that being connected to the internet. I've gotten myself to maybe just buy I have an old separate router that has a single USB connection on. I was going to set that up separately and just have that as my hard drive location.
If I remember correctly, he was using it as a direct connection to the internet.
Well, his router had a USB. His main wireless router had a USB port on it, and you can plug a USB hard drive in and make it a network hard drive. So you have either local storage or you have network backup for all your computers.
Right.
The danger is that in the router itself, you want to make sure that that hard drive is not shared to the internet.
Right.
It should be LAN only. It should not be bound to the WAN interface. And you want to make sure that you keep your router firmware up to date just to stop other things from getting into your router, too.
Exactly.
I guess I have to do a little more looking at my router to see how that's set up or that type of stuff.
Yeah, pretty much every modern router has a web interface in it. So you can go to generally it's something along the lines of 129.21.0 no
192.168.1.1
yeah 192.168.1.1 or something along
many of the mesh routers now have gone to apps and they don't have a Wi-Fi a website in the router anymore
right but in either case you can then go and log into the router itself. And every router also has a username and password. One big hint, if you have not changed from the default password, go do it right now.
Yeah, that I've done.
Because everybody knows those passwords. Everybody on the planet knows those passwords. So go in there and see how your router is set up. If there is a demilitarized zone, some routers call it, or whatever they
DMZ,
happen to call it.
Yeah, DMZ.
DMZ, or just a direct connection to the internet that essentially bypasses the router. And a lot of people use that if they run their own home web server, for example.
I think you're answering this question already, but is it safe to do something to that respect where I put that hard drive on the internet, if you will, for me to access it?
Yes and no.
Okay.
It is only as secure as you make it, but it, in and of itself, it's going to be wide open to anybody on the internet, right? So you have to do right. So you have to do something to make it secure. If you have not done that,
equipment or extra, what would be the extra of that?
A good username and password for one.
That's where it starts. But it also the fact is that it depends entirely on how you're connected, what you're using on that drive. If it's just files, that's a real problem because you may not have any protection at all on it. If, for example, when you go to that address. From, say, your laptop in a cafe somewhere. If it doesn't ask you for a username and password,
your host,
it's wide open to the internet.
Okay.
If it does ask you for a username and password, you'd better hope that the username is obscure and the password is very long. And by a very long, I mean a minimum of 17 characters.
I would probably let my password manager create that one.
Well, that's exactly right. And in that case, make it the full 64. There's no reason not to.
Yeah, make it.
And then you want to make sure that the drive supports encrypted file transfers.
Right.
Okay.
So the short answer is don't make a drive accessible on the internet.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
What you can do is run a VPN server in your house, and then you have a VPN client on your remote device that you then dial into the VPN server. Then the VPN does all the encryption for you. So that's a layer on top of having the hard drive accessible to the local network.
Mm. Right.
And there are specific network-attached storage drives. They're called NAS or NAS, which is basically a hard drive with an Ethernet jack that you plug into an Ethernet switch. And they are designed to do those types of things automatically. And most of them have the type of security built into them because that's how they're designed to do it. I would trust that a lot more than a USB port on my Wi-Fi router.
Right. Yeah. I better get a letter out to Santa.
Yeah, you better get it out quick.
One other quick thing. The one other caller that was talking about the audio problem.
Yeah.
I believe that came from a Windows update. I had it happen on two work machines myself where just those two machines, for whatever reason, didn't do any audio after the update.
Surprise,
oh, yeah, okay.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes one update breaks something another update has to fix.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, enjoy your holidays.
You too. Bye. All of that. Have fun. Yeah, this is our last show, last live show of the year. We are spending time with our families on Christmas Eve. And headaches on Christmas.
Or working in our retail stores.
Or working in our retail stores.
Darn it, that means I have to stay at work all day.
Yeah. But we will be back in the new year with new shows. So look forward to that. But this is our last live show of 2022. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed, all the way from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed, what's up?
Hi, guys. Happy holidays, or whichever you celebrate.
You too.
Thank you. And I hope you're enjoying those rumbles.
I'm going to nap this afternoon.
Yeah.
Right. So I have an older Asus laptop that has been acting very weird. I went to turn it on, and nothing happened. No sound, no light on the power button. It was getting power. I took out the battery. I unplugged it. I put it back in. I plugged it in. Still nothing. And then a little bit later, I pressed the power button, and it turned on. And then the next time after I turned it off, it wouldn't turn on again. And after a while, it did. Any ideas?
Well, first, next time you get it to turn on, back up everything.
Yeah, back up all your stuff. I've got that. Yeah.
I always assume this is the last time it's going to turn on.
Yeah, exactly.
I think.
In fact, every single time you ever turn on your computer,
assume it's the last time. Sounds like you've got a cold joint.
Yeah.
In other words, there's a cold joint that, you know, until it gets warmed up or makes contact, you know, whether you're moving it around or whatever, it heats up just a little bit. That's finally making contact. That
right. So what Dave is saying is every inside there are lots of very very thin wires, and if there's a microscopic break in one, you won't get the machine won't turn on. However, if the machine warms up, what happens when things warm up? They expand,
right?
And that microscopic break connects again, and you can turn the machine on.
So how do I warm it up without any juice?
Well, that's a good question.
Well, just charging it at times can heat it up. Well, that causes heat within the unit, the capacitors, you know, in the battery, and causing the battery to charge up causes heat too.
But I keep the plugged in.
Yeah. Well, that's, if you ever feel the bottom of it because you leave it plugged in, it gets warm.
Yeah, but he said, no, and I get that. So it may not be that, but the fact is that it is, if it won't turn on at all, that's a hardware problem.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Motherboard.
And it's, you know, at some point, I hate to tell you this, but it's a lot cheaper to buy a new laptop than it is to fix the
old one. How old is the machine?
Well, it was upgraded to Windows 10. And it's probably a few years older than that time period.
I would also take a look at the power supply, if it's got the typical external AC transforming brick, yeah. Brick on a leash.
Yep.
Put that up to your ear, see if you can hear any unusual hissing or static noise. I've seen a lot of times where that brick will wear out before the computer does, and just replacing the brick will help.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the light was showing on the laptop itself, saying it was getting...
Yeah, that doesn't...
Juice.
That doesn't.
It's getting juice. It may not be getting enough juice at enough wattage.
Yeah. Once it does come up, how is it saying that it's fully charged?
Well, I don't know. I haven't...
Yeah,
I haven't
see, that's
yet,
what you got to check. Once it, you know, you get it to turn back on... Down the lower right-hand corner, look at the battery and see how much of that is charged. I mean, it might be just, you know, 2 or 3% that it's enough just to turn it on and get it going.
Right. And, so it's fully charged now, but it's been plugged in for several days.
You got to make sure the battery knows it's fully charged. I'm working on one in the office now. I had it plugged in overnight, and it still won't turn on this morning because it says the battery's dead. So the battery's not charging, even though it's been plugged in.
Well, okay, so it says on the screen it's a full battery.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Okay. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but those are really your choices at this point. I mean, it could be any one of a thousand things. Could be that the battery is loose, or the cold shot is in the battery somewhere. And so, you know, there's just a lot
of variables.
A lot of variables there. And I think Steve is right. First check the power cord and the brick. And if that seems good, then it could be a bad battery or it could be a bad motherboard.
Right.
You know, that and I hate to say this, but, you know, unless you can get it to an Asus dealer who can spend some time checking everything, or if you've got another Asus laptop, you can switch the bricks on the power cords.
Yeah, but the thing of it is if it's charging up, he said 100% right now, that means that the charging unit is doing it, which would tend to lean me towards more of the motherboard, in that it's not holding that charge or recharging. And it's just quick draining it. I mean, it's just gathering all the resources, sucking it dry, and that charging unit just can't keep up with it.
Hmm. Okay.
Because of the bad motherboard.
Right.
Yeah, so if you keep an eye on your battery charge while you're using it, if the battery drains while it's plugged in, then there's something wrong in the charging circuitry.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Well, I haven't noticed that, but I'll keep my eye out.
Okie doke. Thanks,
okay.
Ed.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Yeah, when you get into physical problems like that, you know, particularly, I mean, you have to go all the way from the plug in the wall through the power cord into the brick, into the other half of the power cord, into the battery, into the motherboard. And it could be, the problem could be anywhere along that line. And I understand that that's frustrating and annoying, but...
Or the battery connection to the motherboard itself.
Right. It could be as bad as a bad wall plug. Loose connections in the wall plug. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it could be anything along that path.
Or it could be a frayed wire in the charging unit.
Exactly.
You know, the brick part Steve was talking about.
Exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Bob?
Oh, good afternoon. Happy Rumballs.
And thank you very much. So far, they are very.
didn't you guys have a poll or a news item several months ago Oh, big surprise. DuckDuckGo tracks you too.
Yeah, we did. They have stopped. They say they have stopped that.
Hmm.
It looked
for certain definitions of the word stop. Because wasn't there one about Bing? Bing was allowed through because Microsoft was paying them.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Well, unfortunately, I can't look it up now because of what happened with your former website.
Right.
Yeah.
The problem all the way around is it's just a game of who do you trust. And
well, when I had their extension installed into Firefox, when you use their search, you've got a result. It took you to the website, but indirectly, it was still going through one of their servers.
Well, it has to. Right? I mean, you have to get your results from their server.
Yeah, but like if you're reading the page, you've got your list of results, and you're reading the page, you click on the result, the URL said duckduckgo.com/ and then the address or whatever you really were looking at.
Right.
When I seen, okay, bye, you guys are all gone. I use their search site, their website directly, but I yanked all their extensions.
Right, right, right. No, I get it, but the reality is that at some point,
somebody's going to search track you.
Right.
Another question, like this morning or today, this week's poll, my answer would have been none of the above. I don't need a live microphone in my house. But you need to get some way for smart Alex like me to be able to put on, you know, like the old poll in the old forum sections. You had one section for the poll results. And
yeah, everybody wants something like that. The problem is I haven't figured out a good way to make it secure.
Oh, yeah.
And until I do that, we're just not going to have it. That's easy enough. I'm tired of fighting it all week long. So right now it's been great. I haven't had any problems at all for a whole week. This makes me extremely happy.
Find some wood quick.
Yeah. Hey, right. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not the Rumbles?
Sorry?
Are you sure it's not the Rumbles making you so happy?
It could be. It certainly could be. They're certainly not detracting from my happiness.
I just figured a lot of people like myself like to put in smart aleck answers like that. Or maybe just have an other on there. Because I couldn't choose. I didn't participate in the poll this week. Because no answer meets my what it is.
Yeah, I understand. Yes. And every single person, every single week, wants some other answer on the poll.
Yeah.
And I get that. And
so just have a blanket other.
Start your own website, make your own poll.
Well, make other an option.
I can make other an option without...
Without having the option to say what other means.
Right, right, right.
That'll really annoy them.
Right. Right. All right, thanks. Listen, we got to go. We got to go. That music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but do not go too far because we're going to come back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. More Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more wrong answers in the poll, and more Nick Francesco. So take a quick, a little bio break for yourself. Don't forget to hydrate. Hydration is very important. But don't go too far because we're coming back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the truly great. And I say this often, but it is so true. We are truly grateful to you. With your generous support, we remain a public radio station with whatever programming we want on it. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the last live hour of 2022.
We will be pre-recorded shows the next 2 weeks. As we've said for a couple decades, the only time we take off from you folks is when Christmas falls on that weekend.
Right.
And this year, Saturday and Sunday are both New Year's and Christmas, so we're spending time with our families, but we will return the beginning of the year to answer
because by then they'll be sick of us.
Yep.
And we'll be back.
And I got that week off.
Ooh. Hey, baby, whoo! Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Who came in?
Happy holidays to you.
You too.
Before I start, Dave was talking about cold solder joints.
Yeah.
I used to work in a repair shop in the service, and I had equipment I couldn't get power. Of course, first thing I did was check the fuse. Fuse was fine. Finally, I got back to I checked the fuse while it was in line.
Mm-hmm.
The fuse didn't work. Took it out. Fuse did work. So when current was trying to run through it, it broke the connection.
Interesting.
And cold solder joints work the other way, too. Sometimes you're working fine, and then it heats up.
Yep.
Okay, so once upon a time.
Oh, I love these stories.
Yeah. Country far, far away.
Yes, and I will admit that it's probably my intervention in the computer that caused this, but background, this immediately before this happened, I was trying to install an external hard drive to my router. I eventually got to a screen that just locked. I could not get past it. I couldn't get the task manager. I couldn't do anything, so I ended up having to do a manual power down. When I powered back up again, the router screen had background, but no data on it at all. I couldn't do anything. So I went directly to the Ethernet cable on my... We just plugged it, right into the Ethernet cable. And that worked fine for about 15 minutes. Then I could not get to the Internet. I have a laptop with an Ethernet cable that also does not let me to the Internet. I found a couple things that have happened. It does say that the site is blocked, but it's happening on two different machines. All sites are blocked, by the way, not just that one. Saying that they're blocked on both machines, so it's got to be something common to both machines. The only thing I could come up with was possibly my Norton, but I turned off their firewall. I turned off their protection. Still no good. I don't know how to troubleshoot that. I did today when I logged on, found... Not Google Chrome, Edge. That a thing, it said diagnostic policy service is not running. But I don't see how that would be on two computers simultaneously. I don't know how to find what is blocking if it's not my firewall, and it's not Windows firewall either, because I've turned that off.
All right, a couple things I would do. I would certainly, at some point, and not too long from now, I would dance the security tango, just to be sure. However, the first thing I would do is connect a laptop or a desktop directly to your cable modem or fiber modem or whatever you have, bypassing the router, and see if you can get to the Internet with that.
Yeah, I would be thinking of the router if it happens on everything.
It's the problem is in the router.
No, it's not. The the router is completely out of the system. When I said I went directly to the Ethernet cable, I meant I was coming from Greenleaf into the computer.
All right.
Did you reboot the fiber box? Because sometimes...
Yep. Okay. I actually talked to the Greenleaf people. They said it's not on their end. They saw a connection. They were able to identify the computer I had plugged in to the Ethernet.
All right, so the problem, so now we're back to some sort of issue in the machines themselves, and if it's in multiple machines and you don't have the router attached and Greenlight says it's not their router, which in fact it probably isn't because their router doesn't really actually do much.
Yeah, it doesn't do.
Then you've got some sort of bug in your system, and I would dance the tango.
I did that. I guess I haven't done it since this happened. So I will do that.
That's where I would start. You've done a good job troubleshooting, but that would be my next step.
Something's still got a hold of it.
Yep.
Okay, I can do that. I won't be able to obviously update any of my Tango programs because I can't get to the net.
Right. You'd have to
check your extensions too on your Chrome.
Safe boot with networking on Windows.
Yeah. But check the extensions that something else didn't get in there and added without you knowing it.
Okay, I would do that. Steve, what did you mean by check the networking on Windows?
In Windows, there's a safe mode with networking.
When you boot up and you go into the menu instead of going right into Windows.
Right. Yeah,
and that eliminates all third-party extensions and just loads the core Windows drivers, but still loads the network driver, because ordinarily safe mode doesn't even load the network drivers.
And my thing with that is since Windows 10 has come out, it says I have the option to do that, but I have never got the you can connect button to the on the system tray. Never shows up for me to allow me to connect. Says I can. That's the option I pick, but the option never seems to show up. So, but I will certainly run the Tango with the recently updated program.
And do a couple of things that don't involve your browser. Like you can use the ping command, P-I-N-G.
Yep.
And you can say ping, for example, google.com. See what you get back. If you don't get a thing that says, here's your IP address and how long it took to get there.
142.251.40.142.
Sometimes.
And they're currently about 16 milliseconds away from me.
There you go. But those are the things that you're at second level troubleshooting at this point.
Yep, and I'm willing to get in there.
Okay, go for it.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Have a good holiday.
You too. We'll see you in the new year.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. He sounds like he's done everything right. Certainly, in terms of hardware troubleshooting, he's done that. And sort of in much of the software troubleshooting, he's done that. But there are something like with ping or whatever, you can pretty easily see if you're getting somewhere, you're blocked or whatever.
Depending on what the error message you get, if it says
can't. And I would actually ping to the sites he can't get to.
Yeah. Well, start by pinging the router, the fiber router. Then you got to know what the address is, which you won't be able to know. But yeah, so normally you would ping your 192.168.1.1 to see if your computer can ping the router, and then you try to ping the other side. Right. Maybe it's a DNS issue.
You can always go to Google and type in, what's my IP?
Yep.
And it will tell you what your IP address is on the internet, not your internal IP address, but what the rest of the world sees.
Yep.
As your IP address. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Brighton, New York. Hi, Dan, what's up?
Hey, happy holidays to everybody.
You too.
Got two or three questions quickly. I have a website that gets hosted by Servers Pro Plus, and I'm looking for a new web host. I got an invoice from them with phone numbers on it, and I tried calling the phone numbers, and they were disconnected. So I'm suspicious.
Yeah. I will say that I have been using Bluehost, and it's inexpensive enough, and has been very solid for me.
And I've been using DreamHost because they have a free for nonprofit program. So if you are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, you can get free hosting.
Which Cider is?
Yep.
Is there a difference between Plesk and cPanel?
Minimal.
That I need to know about.
Minimal. Both of them do pretty much the same thing. What Dan is asking about is when you get a hosting company, they often give you a control panel of some sort. One of the more common ones is Plesk, and cPanel is the other common one. So which one you use is inconsequential. I have used both, neither one is significantly better than the other.
I found a website, serverguy.com, and which is better, 2023 update.
Oh, nice. There you go.
I got to read down to the bottom and find the end.
Steve will post a link to that as well.
And my final question is, how come whenever I grab a cable, like a USB cable or a monitor cable or something, and I go to plug it into the computer, it's always upside down?
There's a rule for that.
To you guys?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What's really spooky is when it happens with a USB-C.
Yeah.
But, yes, I can't tell you the number of times I've gone to plug something in, and I say to myself, I know which way this has to face.
Yep.
And I'm wrong.
You try it the first way, it doesn't work. So you turn it over and try the second way, and it doesn't work. So then you turn it over and try it the third way, and it works.
And it works every time. Exactly right. Exactly right. You're right there.
So where this one guy went around, you know, because most of the cables are black, took some yellow paint.
Yeah.
And at the end, what he did is he put a little yellow dot on the side that should be faced up. So when you're plugging it into, say, the laptop.
And put a matching dot on the device.
Yeah, and you just plug it right in there, and you know that you got to see the yellow dot, that's got to be faced up to go into the circuit board.
Put a yellow dot on the device and on your cable, and then you just match the dots.
And what's annoying is that there's no standard orientation on computers. So every time a customer brings a computer in, it could be a different orientation that I have to plug the monitor in with.
Mm-hmm. As you know, I've been taking in old laptops and refurbishing them and moving them on to immigrant families, refugee families. And I've had a couple that you would think, you know which is the up. The open side is the upside on a USB-A cable. Not always.
Nope. Yep.
And it annoys me.
Because there's usually a logo on one side or the other, and that's usually the side
that's up.
Yeah.
But not always. So, yeah. No, yeah.
That's one of the greatest things about USB-C is it's interchangeable.
Yeah. It doesn't matter which way.
All right. Well, thanks for your wise counsel. Have a nice holiday.
You talk too.
To you next year.
See you next year.
You too. Have great holidays. We'll see you next year. Bye-bye. Yeah, like I said, there's a number of good hosting companies. I like Bluehost. They've been very good to me. DreamHost is also another good one. There are several that are out there.
I'm sad that Jerry got out of the hosting business, because it's always just go to see Jerry.
It always makes me angry. It still makes me. Doggone it, Jerry.
Yeah.
But yeah, the in general, many of these companies are pretty nice. You're still doing something for yourself somewhere along the line, but they will help you get set up. And again, if you're using something like Wix, if all you want are a couple of simple pages,
mm-hmm.
Something along the lines of Wix is useful to you if you're looking for a WordPress host. Bluehost is very good at WordPress, but also there are places like WizBang that will do that and do a brilliant job. So you know, finding the right place at the right time is not necessarily impossible, but, you know, there are choices. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York again. What's up, Bob?
The guy who can't connect to Greenlight, does he have a static IP account? If he does, then he's got to manually configure his IP configuration because they won't give him an address by DHCP. And further, if he's trying to troubleshoot from outside, they use something called CarrierNet where it's not a direct connection. Even if he's got a dynamic, they use CarrierNet, and so he may not be able to ping his IP from outside.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yep.
Thanks. Good thought. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I had to give up my home VPN service when I went to Greenlight because they don't support direct connection. It's carrier net. So you're already behind a net. Then you run your own net.
Right.
Well, I realized that. I talked to their support people, and when I found that out, okay, I'll take a static. That's all. That was fun to configure on Linux, especially with the NetPlan stuff.
Sure, of course. All right, thanks, Bob.
All right, have a good day.
Appreciate it. This is one of the things I like most about our show is our users know things we don't and point out things we've forgotten or missed. And that makes me happy. All of us are smarter than any of us, and that's the important part of this show. I like that a lot.
The collective...
The collective mind.
The collective mind, yeah. Hive mind.
Right. The hive mind, exactly.
So
you're
the Borg queen?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Now, what was it in Men in Black? People are how did he word it? A person is smart, people are a wild, unruly gang.
Right. Well, it's Harry Seldon, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't predict what one person will do, but I can predict what a mob will do.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. What's up, Jim?
Hey, I have a question regarding a video presentation of your show that you find on Soundbite. Now, I don't think your station contributes to that display, does it?
Where did you see it?
It's on, if you go to YouTube.
Yeah, I do the YouTube broadcast myself. Right here from the studio.
Yeah, Steve is Steve does amazing things. His poor laptop is doing, 15 streams at once. He's got it all
Only
set
four.
Up. It's quite amazing. What?
Only four,
sorry. that's coming from us directly to YouTube. And, of course, once it's on YouTube, you can leave it on YouTube, and it stays there so you can go back and see old shows. Steve also...
What I noticed is that lately, I can't find it sometimes for 50 minutes after the show starts. Today, I couldn't find it until 30 minutes after the show started.
Yeah, you have to keep refreshing the homepage. Keep refreshing the homepage, and that's a function of YouTube itself. We have no control over that.
If you subscribe to the show, then you get notified.
And you ring the bell.
To ring a bell to get notified of every episode, then you can go directly to it.
After the notification, but you have to be a subscriber to the station and then ring that bell to get notification.
I see, and that's different than being a supporter of the show.
Oh, yeah, YouTube is owned by Google. That's just a little different thing you got to do, absolutely.
Oh, okay, now I got you.
There you go.
Okay, second question. I have an old IBM ThinkPad, and I wanted to put Chrome OS Flex on it for one of my great-grandkids. And I wasn't sure whether some machines like this that were old enough that they came with Windows XP had to have a 32-bit version of Chrome OS Flex.
Right. So Flex has a list of compatible computers that it knows it will run on. That doesn't mean it won't run on something else, but that it knows it will run on. And how old is this ThinkPad? And what processor is it running?
It's a Pentium 3 processor. 700 megahertz, and it's only got 512 megabytes of RAM.
Yeah, it may not.
Yeah, that's low.
That's very low end for now. I mean, it was good for its day, absolutely, but its day is long gone. And I think Flex.
Yeah, I'm looking for the list of Flex, known hardware.
It wants 4 gig of RAM, so half a gig of RAM is a little low.
Okay. But probably some version of Linux would run on it, don't you think?
Puppy Linux or damn small Linux should run on it without a problem.
Okay, well, I guess this machine is too old. I was trying to make it like Chrome, that might be similar to a Chromebook that the kids are getting in schools.
Right.
Well, yeah. Okay, thanks, fella.
Sorry.
Hi. Enjoy the coming holidays and have a great new year.
You too. Yeah. We've said this so many times. The price of poker keeps going up, and even with something like Chrome OS Flex, it does need a certain amount of RAM in order to emulate a Chromebook, and the minimum is 4 gigs. So. A half a gig isn't going to do it. I wish it would, but it won't. But like I said, well, that was interesting. Puppy Linux or damn small Linux. I think one of them has been discontinued, but the other one is still available. Should work. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Hi. Happy holidays, gentlemen, like everybody else to you guys. I might have called you on this before, but the way time flies, I've got a Samsung phone, works really good, and I've got Chrome, which does, you know, everything known to mankind, except when I get on the World Cup site and you read about the players, et cetera, and you want to go into some of these sub-paragraphs, which are underlined about, you know, more information, and I click on that, I invariably get, don't ask me why, I get invariably get a pop-up from the bottom that says, you do not have a browser installed that will allow you to open up this article. And so I'm scratching my head. Well, I thought Chrome did everything because it does it wherever else I do, you know, movies, whatever. I'm reluctant to, by the way, it doesn't tell me which browser I should get, Firefox, whatever. So I'm reluctant to just, arbitrarily throw one in there, hoping that the phone will pick it up. But the site will pick it up and won't screw anything else up that's in there. You guys have any ideas what in the world's going on?
There are just some websites that are not properly designed to work on mobile. The web should be mobile first. I say that, and I didn't design our site to be mobile first.
Most mobile browsers don't need a mobile site anymore because they've gotten better.
So it may well be that the World Cup site simply doesn't work well on a phone. Certainly if you've got a fairly recent Samsung phone, with a version of Chrome on it, you should be able to open anything. And if it doesn't open, it's likely not you, it's them.
I see. Okay.
Anybody else who's on the World Cup site, if you can get there, let us know. And that would tell us that it's Ed's problem, but. The only other thing, it doesn't even say you're out of RAM or anything like that. It just says you don't have a browser that'll open this site. Now,
do you have a tracker blocker or pop-up blocker or anything like that loaded?
No. Sometimes when I go to the Play Store, it'll tell me I have to take off the, I forget the name of it. It's just to make the screen less hard on your eyes. So I just take that off, and then I can, load something real quick, and then put it back on again. No, it's not that. It's the I even called Samsung, and he didn't know what I was talking about. It must be something that, like you say. But I when you said that I have a Chromebook, I think I might try. Maybe the Chromebook might work.
Try that, and let us know what happens.
Thanks, Nick. Bye.
All right, thanks. Well, there it is. We're going to take another quick break. But don't go too far. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the entire known universe. Holy moly. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And once again, we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Larry?
Well before that...
Before that, yes.
View 52 in the YouTube chat says, have another rum ball. Okay.
Well, if you're going to insist...
I'm going to get one out of here. All right.
Hi, guys. I'm back again. What I would like to do is set up a second backup drive on my iMac through a USB-C to USB-C hub. What I'm wondering is, will the Mac see both of those drives and alternate between the backup that Time Machine does with the hourly, daily, once a week, that kind of thing, or have I suddenly created a manual operation?
Nope. Apple added multi-drive support to Time Machine several systems ago.
Oh.
It will back up to whatever drive it sees. One thing we have seen is that if you don't plug a drive in for a while, you start getting messages that you haven't backed up.
Oh, so
to
that's
that drive.
Why I'm getting
it
all
doesn't,
these messages.
Yeah. If you go in and look at the message, it will say this drive hasn't backed up in 180 days, but this drive backed up an hour ago.
Gotcha. Now, can I rename the drives? Because typically I've been using these Samsung T7s.
Yep.
Then I get two T7s, but I need to be able to differentiate between what I'm looking at.
Yep. Yeah, that's no problem. It's a little easier if you name it before you set it up in Time Machine, but Time Machine will recognize that you changed the name.
Got it. That's all I needed to know.
That's all you
Thank
get,
you,
then.
Oh. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And then when Time Machine does its backup, it names the backup by the name of your computer and then the date and time it was backed up. So you can take that drive to another computer and use one drive with multiple computers, but you have to remember to do that. So it's usually easier just to get a hard drive for each computer.
Yeah, right.
They're relatively inexpensive.
Yeah. Right, comparatively, yeah.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank View 52 for reminding us to have another rumble. I didn't need another rumble, but I have one. So thank you.
Well, thank being impolite not to eat them that I brought them in.
They asked, you know, and that's the last one I'm having, by the way. I have to drive. But, yeah.
And Frederick Peters says that...
Brandy bread. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's not a World Cup fan, but every site he tried with Chrome worked. And I'm going through the different sites, too, and it doesn't look like there is a free streaming site legitimately. Okay. A World Cup is available on Peacock. Fox, Telemundo, NBC, and Hulu, and YouTube TV on the Fox network and Fox Sports One. So every time I click on one of them, it says you got to sign in with your account information. So you have to have an account with one of those services. I did find an interesting one that seemed to be Thai and Vietnamese called watchworldcup.org.
Well, there you go. So if you speak either of those languages... Yeah. You could be all right there.
Just watch the ball go back and forth.
Or just watch the ball. Provide your own commentary. Why not?
Yeah.
Turn off the sound. Provide your own commentary. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hi, fellas. I know how you're doing today, so I'm not even going to ask your rum ball day. So you're doing A-OK.
We're doing fine, thank you.
You're doing fine.
Coasting. And,
okay. I'm on an even keel myself. VeraCrypt, the encryption software. I just wondered if you had an opinion on that.
What's the name of it?
It's called Vera. I may be pronouncing it a little irregularly here. VeraCrypt, VeraCrypt.
Oh, I'm unfamiliar with it. I have to be honest.
Okay,
never heard of it.
Well, it's open source, so that's that's the one that's based on TrueCrypt.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
Yeah. TrueCrypt itself it should be pretty strong. It should be pretty useful if it is open source.
And it was vetted recently. I remember them talking about that on Security Now.
Security Now. I knew I heard the name.
Yeah.
I knew I heard the name. So, yeah, it's probably not a bad one at all. I don't, it looks like it's available as a zip file for Windows or as an MSI.
Yeah. It'll work with Linux as well.
Yeah. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the concept, MSI is the Microsoft something installer. I forget what it's probably software.
Duh.
And what it is, it's essentially one click install. So you download the file and then you just double click on it, and it does an automatic install. And that's a lot easier for some people than unzipping it, figuring out where to put it,
yep,
all the other yada yada. And so that means it also automatically updates the
files within the scripts within
the big file that
registry.
Oh, screw registry.
Yeah.
It's the Rumbus. It's your fault. Yeah. This is your fault.
And so that lets you make your own encrypted disk images. Mac has FileVault built in. Windows has BitLocker built in, and there's lots and lots of choices for Linux, and this is one of them. And it's kind of nice that this also works on Windows and Mac, as well as darn near every version of Linux, Raspberry Pi, BSD.
Yeah, well, it looks like a pretty handy little program.
All right, well, that's great. That was my only question, and I want you fellas to help you, your family, all the radio station, and I'll cast a wide net. Everyone
Absolutely.
Who has and will listen to Soundbites, have a merry and blessed Christmas.
Thank you. You too.
All
Absolutely,
right, sir.
You too.
You gentlemen. I'm going to call you gentlemen.
all right.
All right. Give me one.
Go all right. Ahead. It's a Christmas miracle. You're allowed it.
Yeah, and you're eating your rum balls, so we're good to go.
That's right. I'm mellow, so go ahead and call us.
You're mellow, you see. That's what happens, Nick. Your guard is down. The shields are down. All right, you guys have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks. Thanks, Ken. Right, you too. Bye-bye. Yeah. Dave, you know what? Dang good rum balls, sir. Dang good this year. And I'm not just talking about the alcohol content. I'm talking about the flavor of the rum ball.
Well,
that's a dang tasty little rum ball.
Yes, they're very simple to make.
Well, doesn't matter. You did a good job anyway.
Thank you.
No, we appreciate that.
Huh?
All right, let me read another.
I was trying to think of how many years we've been doing that.
Yeah.
It's been a good 10, 12 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, easy. I have to read this one. It wasn't my first choice, but I have to go to it because we have so many people still doing this. Microsoft Chromium Edged, a Chromium-based Edge browser was an improvement over the initial version of Edge in many ways, including its support for Windows 7 and Windows 8. But the end of the road is coming. Microsoft has announced that Edge will end support for Windows 7 and Windows 8 in mid-January of 2023, shortly after those operating stop getting regular security updates. Windows 7 and Windows 8 support will end for Windows Edge WebView 2, which can use Edge's rendering engine to embed web pages in non-Edge apps. The end of support date for Edge coincides with the end of security update support for both Windows 7 and 8 on January 10th and the edge of Google Chrome support for Windows 7 and 8 in version 1.10. Because the underlying Chromium engine in both Chrome and Edge is open source, Microsoft could continue supporting Edge in older Windows versions if it wanted, but the company is using both end-of-support dates to justify a clean break for Edge. If you thought that Windows 7 had already stopped getting security updates, you're not wrong. Despite the many people who write to me saying, I'm still getting an update for Windows 7, you're not. Most people stopped receiving general-purpose security updates for Windows 7 back in 2020, which is about a decade after its original release. But because Windows 7 was so popular with businesses, Microsoft took the unusual step of offering 3 additional years of optional paid update support for the operating system. Those updates are ending now, too. A similar program is not being offered for the significantly less popular Windows 8, which has just passed its 10-year anniversary. Edge will continue to run on Windows 11 and later versions of 10, as well as supported versions of Mac OS, Linux, iOS, and Android. So are you still living in the past? Can't send us a fax, sorry, but you could ask Mabel to give us a ring at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Speaking of which, somebody asked about free fax online. and I don't remember who that was, and I apologize. There's a couple of them out there. One of the more well-known ones is faxzero.com. And that's free faxing to anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. There's also gotfreefax.com.
Some of them are you get a certain number free, and if you want more than that, you have to pay.
Right. For gotfreefax, it's 3 pages per fax maximum and 2 free faxes per day maximum. So, and there's HelloFax. Did I mention Fax Zero? I did. Fax Plus. So there's a bunch of those.
Now you have to understand that that company can read everything you send.
Right.
So don't send anything critical.
If you are using Google Docs, you can send files directly from Google Docs. So that's always a possibility.
And most of the other cloud file stores too.
Right. That's easy enough. You can do any of that. And it really is not terribly difficult to do. You just have to know exactly where to go to do it and make it happen.
There are,
that's plugins. Sending facts though. It's not receiving facts.
Yeah. There are, plugins for Google Workspace to do faxing.
Yeah.
It looks
but
like.
That's Google Workspace.
Yeah.
So that's the one you pay for.
Yep.
As opposed to Google Drive, which is free. And I don't know if the free fax plugins work on that. But there is online faxing. I don't know who still takes faxes, but clearly somebody does and probably a government agency.
Oh, here's a website. Upload from your PC or from Google Drive and type in the phone number you want to send it to.
There you go. There's several of those. Fax Zero and
OnlineFax.io is that one.
There you go.
That's what I found as a Google plugin, and then, oh, it looks like it just works as Google Drive, so it showed up in the Google Store.
Right. the other thing, again, I'm going back to this, who do you trust?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to do this, I get it, but you have to understand that...
There comes risk.
There come risks. So I don't necessarily know I would use these free services to send any kind of delicate or personal data anywhere.
Yeah, any confidential information.
Right. I wouldn't use it for any of that. Many banks offer free faxing services to people who have accounts with them. I know that the bank my wife uses will allow her to send free faxes. Again, not 100 of them. But, you know, they will allow you to send a couple of free ones here and there.
There still is a thing called mail.
The what now?
Mail.
Email.
Box,
yes, I've heard of those email.
Blocks, those big blue boxes that you go over and dump a letter that has a stamp on it.
Oh, the little baby TARDISes on the street corner. Yeah.
Actually, that's true. Something goes in there and comes out a completely different place.
That's exactly right.
Never thought of it that way.
It is bigger on the inside.
Yeah.
Bill?
What?
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 Sorry, we were just geeking out on something that had nothing to do with computers.
And we got
to
wait until November of next year for the next episode.
They're talking about a Christmas episode, but I don't think it's this Christmas.
Right.
We're looking at next Christmas.
Well, I told you when I first read they were going to do a new episode in November 23. Oh, great. It's going to be a Thanksgiving episode. No, it's not November 23rd. It's November of 23.
Right.
Yeah, I couldn't get the city because...
Sorry. We were laughing too hard.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Joel from Pennsylvania. Where are you calling from, Joel?
Jenkintown, Pennsylvania, formerly of Pittsburgh.
Jenkintown.
Yep. So, happy holidays, guys. My question is, you've talked about ways to avoid tracking, but I'm wondering what we can do to get away from cross-platform tracking.
That's harder.
Mm-hmm.
That's much harder. And there are a couple of products that will help you with that. One of them is uBlock Origin. We'll do that. I believe Ghostery does that as well.
Yeah.
So those are add-ins to your browser. Cross-platform Well, no, that's cross-site. Are you talking about cross-site or cross-platform?
Cross-platform. You know, I'll shop for a sofa on my PC, and the ads will show up on my iPhone and my iPad.
Because you logged into the same account on both devices.
Mm-hmm. With the same username and password. So they're not tracking the device. They're tracking your login.
And because virtually every site has a Facebook button on it and a Twitter button on it and all the other social network buttons on it, they know what site you've been to on one device. And when you log into your same account on another device, they know that you're there too. Doing things like Ghostery or uBlock Origin can block those type of local tracking, which then would stop them from tracking you on your other devices as well.
Okay, so that would work. Ghostery, I understand, will work on a PC. What about the iPad and iPhone?
While he's looking that up, I will remind you that if you are tracked at the other end, so you sign in with joel@pennsylvania.com and on your desktop and you buy something. When you log in as joel@pennsylvania.com on your phone, they already know you bought something on your laptop because it's at their end, and now you're the same person, so they know to give you an ad there. And there's nothing that will block that because that's happening at their end.
Because it's going by the name, not the device.
Right. It's going by your username and password.
So if you log out of everything, if you always go into a private browser and you always log out before you close the browser.
Nope, that's not going to do it because they're tracking you at their end.
Yeah.
So if you bought something, you already logged on to their site.
At one point, yep.
And if you then use that same login on another device, they know that you've now used two devices. So they both belong to the same person.
I'm on Amazon under a specific username and password. And then I go into my New York Times account with a different username and password. I see the ads cross-platform on different devices.
Okay, now that you should be able to block, because what's happened there is that Amazon and New York Times share information. And one of the things they share is the fingerprint of your device. So every single device that goes on the internet has a unique fingerprint. And that includes the processor being used, the amount of memory, the apps that are open, all kinds of things.
Your screen size, your volume setting.
Right. So,
all kinds of things you would never think they know.
Right. And so let's say both Steve and I have the same iPhone. I still have different volume settings. I've got different apps on mine. I've got
different fonts
maybe. A different color scheme. There's enough differences to not only differentiate me from Steve, but also to say, oh, this is quite definitely Nick Francesco's iPhone, no matter where I go. And they share that fingerprint amongst themselves.
And because Amazon is an advertiser, they get that data so they can target ads.
Right.
And there's an Amazon bug. The little icons for each website, we call them bugs, on pretty much every website, along next to the Facebook one and the Twitter one, that Amazon knows you went to both places because the Amazon bug is on both websites and sets cookies for themselves.
Right. There's very little way to get around any of that. Theoretically, using a browser like DuckDuckGo or one of those or Brave will theoretically stop some of that. But again, if you've logged into two different websites with the same device, they each now have that fingerprint. And if they share data, they know who you are on each device.
So Big Brother is watching, and there's not much we can do about it.
Yep. I'm sorry. I wish it were different.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Happy holidays to you.
And the same to you. Same to you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah, unfortunately, you can.
Soundbite your name.
You're never truly anonymous on the internet.
Okay, hold on.
I wish you could be.
Used to be you could go through Tor nodes until government agencies started running their own Tor nodes.
Right.
So now they can watch you go through them.
Right. I wish I could say there were a way to make it easy or even possible to be anonymous on the internet, but it no longer truly is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. What's up, Gary?
Hey, Nick, you mentioned you wonder why people are still using faxes, and I just didn't know if you were aware of this or not, but legal documents have to be faxed. They can't be scanned and sent because it's easy to alter a scanned document, not so much with a fax.
Right, right.
That's why the banks do that.
Yeah,
so
real
why
estate
would somebody still provide faxes? Courts won't accept a scanned document as evidence, but they will a fax document. People might want to know that.
They are starting to go with electronic signatures and secure document signing.
Yeah.
But then whoever watches you sign it has to attest that you signed it. So it's like having a notary involved in making your signature.
But didn't we just say that they can track our devices and know exactly who we are on each device, but the government hasn't caught up with that yet?
Yeah, so it's not the government we have to worry about. It's Amazon and Facebook and Google and Microsoft and Apple. And
Gary? Did Gary go in?
Yeah, he lost.
All right, thank you, Gary.
But yeah, it always seems like it's the real estate, you know, the legal forms that are the last fax holdout.
Right, right. And I get that. I do. Particularly if you have to, if you have to have something notarized, I suppose. And like I said, my bank and my wife's bank, let you do that. So every once in a while we have to have something notarized, and she will go to the bank, get it notarized, and fax it immediately. And I suppose the notary is standing right there watching it, so you know, maybe that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Mostly it's legal documents these days, but it's just they know who we are. We just talked about that. They know who we are, and they know there's no getting around it. And you would think that the government would be at the forefront of that. Maybe they are. They just don't want us to know they are.
Yeah.
Probably.
It is almost impossible nowadays to be anonymous on the internet. It's been that way for 30 years. I told you a story that happened to me 25, 30 years ago at RIT. I got a call from the lawyers of a movie company because somebody had downloaded a movie.
A crappy movie, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was The Waterboy with Adam Sandler. Trust me, if I was going to steal a movie, that would not be the one. And they tracked it to a particular computer. They called RIT and said, who owns this computer? And it was me. So they called me, and I said, yeah, I own all the computers in the college of business. They're all registered to me, but let me look and see who got that computer, who was using that computer. And we found it had been loaned out to a student who had thought, oh, this is a great way to hide. No. it's almost impossible. You know, I'm sorry. I wish it were otherwise. It is not. It is almost impossible to be truly anonymous on the internet. And if you cannot accept that, get off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Just get off it. That's just the way that's going to work. I wish it were different. It is not. It is not. You're just not anonymous anymore. And none of the things you do will get you there.
We had somebody in the YouTube chat wonder if Dave will share his rumball recipe.
Oh, we can do that. We can do that at some point in the near future. Unfortunately, we're done. That music tells us we are done. It is the end of the last live show of 2022. We're going to take the next couple weeks off so that our families don't either divorce us or slit our throats in our sleep. But we will be back with a whole new set of Soundbites shows in the new year. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray for, 32 and change years taking time out of their busy lives to do this. I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Whatever you celebrate at this time of year, I hope it brings you peace, joy, love, and health. Be good to one another, will you?